a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate State Affair will come to order. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown.
Here.
Frerichs.
Here.
Helene.
Here.
Lederman. Lucas.
Here.
Maher. Teason.
Here.
Graves.
Here.
Rowan.
Here. Quorum is present. You have the minutes, comments, action on the minutes.
Second.
Motion by Rabe to approve, second by Brown. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meetings are approved. A couple of reminders before we get started today. It's nice to see a big crowd at State Affairs today. If you wish to testify, I would ask that you sign the roster by the front door. Also, just a reminder to check your cell phones, make sure they're in an appropriate setting. Looks like we have a number of guests, and I'm guessing high schools across the state, so I'd like to do some introduction to find out who all's joining us in Senate State Affairs. First of all, I think we've done sure somebody representing your group.
Stand up.
Lake Preston, why don't you guys stand up? Let's see how big a crew we have from Lake Preston. Great. Welcome to your state capital. Who else? Scotland High School juniors? Why don't you guys stand up? Oh, good crew. Fine looking bunch. Who else? Why don't you guys get up and tell us where you're from? Come on. Let's see, who's the future leader in the group?
From Chamberlain.
Be brave.
Wow. Wow.
The whole senior class?
Is this senior?
The whole senior class.
Very good. Welcome to your state capital. Any other guests? Anybody else? Okay. All right. In our page, we have a page. Why don't you come to the microphone and introduce yourself?
I'm Bridget Redder, and I'm from Watertown. And I want to be an elementary school teacher when I grow up.
Very good. Thanks for your help. With that, we will take up today's calendar, starting with Senate Bill 99, which is below the line. And by virtue of announcement, I will just let you know we have two bills below the line. We're going to take Senate Bill 99 first and then move to Senate Bill 1 and then go down the regular calendar. So with that, we will open a public hearing for Senate Bill 99 and proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Harry Christensen. I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Ethanol Producers Association, of which Poet LLC is a member. And we're appearing on behalf of that company and that organization with respect to this bill. I do have an amendment that we have discussed briefly. And then if I could, to just address both the amendment and the bill, since the real bill doesn't have anything in it. And it almost got away from me.
Yeah. We will take a motion to move the amendment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Rave to amend, second by Brown. We will hold action, and you can testify to the amendment, obviously.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The situation that we're dealing with here is kind of a Poet LLC, which is one of the world's largest ethanol plant ethanol producers, over 1 billion gallons a year, is headquartered in Sioux Falls. It has 27 different biorefineries located in seven different states, six of which are in South Dakota. The situation is that when they did their business plan, they created these plants by bringing investors in. Stuff is popping. By bringing investors in different degrees. They are limited partnerships, limited LLC type organizations, and in every plant they have a different percent of ownership. They may have 10% in Michigan, 50% in Iowa, 100% in Indiana, but it's all different. Now, where the problem arises under their health insurance plan is under the ACA, Obamacare, each one of those plants have to be treated as an independent business and would require them, rather than carrying a master policy for all 1,700 of their employees, it would require them to cover up to 26 individual plant policies for the each individual plant. And that's because they don't own 100% of the plants. And so under the ACA, they would be created as a small business plant, and they would have to buy a policy for each one. The cost of the company would be in the millions of dollars. They would also have to degrade the benefits they currently offer because they couldn't afford to do that. Now, they have met with the insurance division and other people in the insurance industry, and they came up with a solution for the problem. It's called a multiple employer trust. Under South Dakota law, which was passed, I believe it was 2006 or 2007 on behalf of the Bankers Association, if you have an association that is has multiple employers with different ownership interests, obviously, under our law, you can create what's called a multiple employer trust. Now, the problem with that is that our law only allowed that as to nonprofit organizations. What we were able to negotiate with the insurance division, with the assistance of the governor's office, is a very narrow exception that would allow POET to become eligible to use a multiple employer trust. And what that would allow them to do is have a master policy that would cover all 1,700 employees plus their dependents and go on business as they are today, and it would exempt them from the small business requirement of the ACA. That's basically where the bill goes. We had long discussions with the insurance division. We've had discussions with the Bankers Association because they initially passed this for their benefit, and we didn't want to jeopardize any of the arrangements they had. And I think my understanding is that they'll be testifying with respect to this too. That's in essence what the bill does. It creates an ability for POET and its 1,700 employees to continue with their health plan that exists today, notwithstanding the interference from Obamacare. I'm glad to stand by for any questions. Mr. Josh Anderson from the insurance division is here to answer any really technical questions. And I think between the two of us, we can probably deal with questions as they may arise. Thank you for your consideration of this bill. We do appreciate it. POET is a very big company in South Dakota. It's headquartered in Sioux Falls, and it's done a lot for the economy, and we're asking you to help us out with this provision. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further proponents on Senate Bill 99 and specifically the Hog House Amendment. Since we have so many high schoolers, I'm going to take just a second to explain a Hog House Amendment. A Hog House, the Senate Bill 99 was basically just a vehicle bill. It was a carcass, no more than a title. We knew we had an issue to deal with in the legislature, and the legislation wasn't prepared prior to the time we were hitting the deadline, so a carcass bill or a vehicle bill was introduced in the form of Senate Bill 99. This amendment represents the entire bill, and they call that a Hog House Amendment, which basically rewrites the entire legislation. Hog House is a term specific to South Dakota that was a result of amendment was made way back, I think, in the 30s when an appropriation was switched around at SDSU to purchase a hog house. And so it's been institutionalized as an expression specific to South Dakota ever since. So,
were you in high school then?
No, not quite. Sorry for the interruption, proponent testimony.
Thank you, Senator Roden, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Everson. I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Bankers Association. This body of law that is being proposed to be amended and now in the Hog House Amendment to Senate Bill 99 did come to the legislature in 2005 at the request of the South Dakota Bankers Association. At that time, we asked the legislature for permission to do two different things. One was to put together a fully insured multiple employer plan, and the second part that's being considered here today was we were also contemplating a day might come when we would want to be self-insured. And so we did that in 2005. In 2006, we started a multiple employer plan inside the South Dakota Bankers Association that was fully insured and ran that way from 2006 through 2013. The passage of the Affordable Care Act at the federal level prompted us to take a look at this self-insured multiple employer trust statute that had been on the books for a while, and we made a decision last year to actually move to a self-insured multiple employer trust, and we've been operating that for all of a couple months now, Mr. Chairman, since the first of the year. We recognize certainly that when we passed get this legislation passed in 2005, that there might come a day when some other party might be interested in following this model. And so our interest going forward, frankly, the reason I'm sitting here is because we feel like we have a vested interest in the future of this legislation because of the self-insured plan that we are now operating. We're essentially running a little health insurance company inside of our organization right now, and we want to make sure that any future groups, whether they are for-profits or not-for-profits, would be held to the same high standards that we are being held to. And so I do appear here as a proponent of this, moving this discussion forward in the legislative process. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Any opponents to Senate Bill 99? Seeing none, questions? Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Kurt Everson. Actually, probably two. Number one, I assume then this will meet, once you put your self-insurance in place, it'll meet the deductible requirements and everything under the Affordable Care Act. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, indeed it will. We started moving our large group fully insured plan in the direction of the some of the stuff that we saw coming in the Affordable Care Act a couple years ago. So we are in compliance with that. It's just that we have some flexibility under our plan that the Affordable Care Act wouldn't provide to a group like ours.
And then follow up, I would assume there'd be interest on this type of multiple employer trust nationwide, or other companies doing this, or in or out of South Dakota that you're aware of?
Mr. Chairman, I think the honest answer is the company's approach to providing insurance coverage to their employees is going to evolve over time. There have been multiple employer trust type structures organized and operating under federal laws, under the ERISA laws, for a long period of time, and there are other state bankers associations that have been operating under those federal laws for an extended period of time. And so this is kind of it's a state level mirror of what the federal government has allowed for some period of time. So I think all of those things are going to continue to evolve in relation to the Affordable Care Act.
Further questions? Any other questions? Seeing none, we will close public testimony and questions and open to committee discussion, comments, or action. And the first action would be to vote on the motion to amend. Any further comments on the motion to amend Senate Bill 990A? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. 99 is so amended. Further comments, discussion, action. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I move do pass Senate Bill 99 as amended.
Second.
Motion by Brown, do pass as amended. Seconded by Rave. Comments on that motion? Senator Brown.
Well, I certainly appreciate the proponents bringing this forward. Anytime we can help our South Dakota businesses move forward, especially such a large employer who has done great things for the state, I think we certainly deserve to have that discussion, and I'd like to see this legislation move forward.
Thank you. Any other comments? Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly would echo the comments that the Senator just made, and also add, as far as Poet, they're very significant in our rural communities because they are spread out, and those employees, even one of them happens to be my brother, and they run a good ship, and obviously this is going to help make sure they can continue to comply because, as Mr. Christensen mentioned, those various investors, a lot of them farmer investors, still retain a portion of ownership, and they have recently even benefited from some dividends, so it's a great model, and obviously we want to have Poet be able to adapt their health insurance plans to work the best for them.
Any other comments? Well, I just close by saying, I think this is the right solution. I only wish that
all the problems that are going to be created by Obamacare were this easily resolved, because I know that's not going to be the case. But that's a discussion for another day. Any further comments? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass as amended Senate Bill 99. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Brown.
Aye.
Furries.
Aye.
Boleyn.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Rabe.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. At this time, I would take a motion to amend the title 99 OTA.
So moved.
Moved by Rave, seconded by Lederman. Comments on that motion? Seeing none. All those in favor of the title amendment will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Title is so amended.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown.
I move consent.
Second. Motion consent by Brown, seconded by Rave. Comments on that motion? Seeing none. All those in favor of the consent motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay?
No.
99 will not go on consent. One more minute to explain what just happened to the high schoolers. Consent calendar is, we put a bill on consent. It was a bill that had no opposition testimony that the committee feels is kind of a no-brainer, if you will. And then they all appear on the Senate floor debate on the consent calendar. They're not open to debate. However, any member of the Senate can pull it off the consent calendar. But it has to have unanimous support from the committee to put it on consent. And there was one no vote on the committee, so it does not go on consent. So with that, we will move now to Senate Bill 1, which is an act to provide for the selection of the chair and vice chair of the Executive Board of the Legislative Research Council to provide for year-round governance of the Legislative Research Council by the Executive Board to provide for terms of each constituted executive board to provide for the continuity of board membership. Senate Bill 1 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
This is a two-page.
Where did I go?
Everyone on this side has this. Mr. Chairman, already made some comments earlier. Can I just rebrief what, from right here? Or you want me to go up front?
No, you're fine right there.
Senate Bill 1. Mr. Chairman, is essentially changing the leadership of the executive board that meets during the interim. It changes. I am currently the executive board chairman. However, after this bill should pass, it would make the president pro tem and the speaker of the house the chairman of the executive board going forward, starting in 2015. And then it would also defines that the executive board would be a standing committee and would run from sine die to sine die, and that the membership of the executive board would have to essentially be elected right after the November elections, because they would assume their positions fairly regularly, starting the 1st of December, essentially, at the budget address. So what we've seen right now, we've seen a little turmoil this last year since the executive director retired, and we're going through an executive search, and I have appointed a subgroup to that, except for that was prior to the sort of session. Now that subgroup is working on hiring an executive director, and the question came the other day is, who do they report to, that subgroup I appointed? So they're currently reporting to the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem, and the chairman of the executive board has been kind of left out of the picture because of the session where the executive board really isn't meeting right now. And so the leadership is taking over those reins. So what it essentially would do is provide a little continuity with Senate Bill 1 and who is in charge when the legislative session is running. So, thank you.
Thank you. And this bill has had a former hearing, but I would grant a little latitude for anybody that cares to testify. I don't think there probably is anybody. And as a further explanation, this bill was below the line on the agenda because it's had a prior hearing. We've already went through the drill as far as proponents, opponents. And so at this stage, I will open to questions from the committee. Any questions? Seeing none, we will move to comments, discussion, action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Maher.
I move to pass on Senate Bill 1.
Second. Motion by Maher, seconded by Lederman, do pass on Senate Bill 1. Comments on that motion? Any further comments, Senator Maher?
No, thank you.
Any comments? Senator Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I think the best way to look at this is to remind ourselves that the legislature is an employer.
We have 20-some full-time employees and many dozens of part-time employees that work during the session. No employee would like to work for an organization where they have one boss January, February, and March, and then they have another boss the rest of the year. And I think we found on the executive board that there's pitfalls and things can go wrong when that scenario is in place, and that's kind of the situation that we're in now. And I think Senate Bill 1 attempts to address that so that our employees realize that they have one boss essentially that they work for and provide some continuity of leadership for the legislature, especially in our role as an employer of employees in of the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments? Well, I believe that this is a step in the right direction. Many years ago when I was in the House, we had legislation that was similar to this, although it was identical to this, but it took an extra step of putting the majority leader and minority leader of both chambers on the executive board also, and reduced the number of members that were elected at large. I think that in retrospect that might have been went a little too far. At least perception-wise, it was in the House because it was killed then. But I think this is a reasonable first step to provide that continuity, and for that reason, I hope we can support this bill. Any further comments? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on Senate Bill 1. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Brown.
Aye.
Frericks.
Aye.
Pauline.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Lucas.
No.
Maher.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Ray.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 1 goes to the floor. Do pass. We are back to the top of the calendar with Senate Bill 10, an act to revise certain provisions related to the annual budget and report submission. Senate Bill 10 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony. I'm not much of a Ripley lip reader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Senator Corey Brown. I represent District 23. You know, as was discussed with this last bill, this past summer, we went through a number of exercises, one of which was a comprehensive audit of the LRC and its staff from the National Council of State Legislatures. And they ended up producing a report which identified a number of areas in which we could improve the legislative branch and the way that we operate. However, once that report was done, kind of at the request of some of us on the executive board, we asked our staff to go through and also identify additional ways that they thought we could improve that process. And I believe Senate Bill 10 is the result of some of those discussions. Now that the bill has been introduced, we've had a chance to have some discussions, both formally and informally, about the value of that. At this time, it would be my contention that I don't think Senate Bill 10 really goes as far or accomplishes what the initial goals were, so I would request on behalf of the committee that we go ahead and dispose of Senate Bill 10 at this time.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Proponent? Sorry.
Joyce Smolniski, Executive Director of the South Dakota Budget and Policy Institute, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'll bring you a comment since the sponsors are basically withdrawing the bill, but I will bring you a comment regarding this type of budgeting information. We went out and shared how the budget process works with the citizens of South Dakota a couple years ago. And of the recommendations that came out of those meetings with over 500 people in 16 communities in the budget area, one of the things that they ask for, and this is in our published report, is that there be additional budget the budget system scheduling be adjusted so as far as the deadlines and the timelines would allow for better public understanding, better public input and understanding. So whereas this bill may not remain a vehicle that you'll use to achieve that goal, as you look at additional bills in the future, striving to make your budget process as transparent as possible, both to you as legislators and to your public who's trying to follow the process as well, we would encourage that. Thank you.
For the proponents. Are there opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Any questions? Seeing none, committee discussion, comments, action. Senator Brown.
I would like to make one additional comment that I think is relative here. Those who have been around here for a couple of years will probably recall, and I believe it was my first year being here in the legislature about 6 years ago, and serving on appropriations, we run into this fine line between trying to get information out as far in advance as we can, but also dealing with changing circumstances. So that first year, I remember going through about three iterations of the budget. We had one in December, we ended up getting another one right away in January, and then we got a third version as the economy continued to deteriorate. To be honest, from a legislative standpoint and being on that Appropriations Committee, having three budgets was not very helpful in trying to sort out the differences. And I wouldn't have to go any further than this last fall when in November we had a sudden influx of unclaimed property dollars. So if I take a look at Senate Bill 10, the way it's structured, I would venture to say that if this were in place, we would have ended up with a second budget because ultimately the governor would have had to come up with a new proposal to deal with those dollars. So I certainly appreciate the comments of the other proponent, and I think that was one of the ideas behind Senate Bill 10 initially, but I think we probably need to put a little more thought into this process in order to make it work.
Okay, further comments, discussion, action, Senator Rave.
Mr. Chairman, I move to table Senate Bill 10.
Second. Motion by Rave, second by Maher to table. A tabling motion is non-debatable. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Ferrix.
Aye.
Pauline.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Lucas.
No.
Maher.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. Motion passes. Senate Bill 10 is tabled. We'll now move to Senate Bill 176, an act to revise a fund for which the sales and use tax revenue from certain remote sellers and Internet access services is deposited and to repeal the tax relief fund. Senate Bill 176 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Good morning. I'm Senator Deb Peters, District 9 from Hartford. The page is passing out an amendment for Senate Bill 176. Chair.
Is it on? Senator Peters, you have an amendment. Would you like us to just move the amendment so you can speak to the
yes, please.
Amended bill? I have Amendment 176FB. Is there a motion to amend?
Mr. Chair, I move 176FB.
Second.
Motion by Senator Brown, second by Senator Rave to amend. Senator okay. Peters, you can speak to the bill and the amendment.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Senate Bill 176 came about for a couple of different reasons through a bunch of different conversations at the beginning of session. Unfortunately or fortunately, as conversations change throughout session, so do bills have to change. And 176 did address two different items going on in Washington, D.C. However, the most pressing issue right now is the Main Street Fairness Act going on in Washington, D.C., and it has been scheduled for a hearing on March 4th. For the House in front of the U.S. Judiciary Committee with Chairman Goodlatte. The Main Street Fairness Bill has already passed the Senate. If it passes the House, it'll go into conference because obviously the two bills will not be identical the way it's going right now. I am the incoming president for Streamline Sales Tax, which is one of the movements nationwide in order to get the Main Street Fairness Act passed within the federal government, allowing the state of South Dakota to collect from remote sales or internet tax. In doing that, if this were to pass and the president were to sign the bill, it would have revenue implications within the state of South Dakota. Estimates are anywhere from 20 to 60 million. It really just kind of depends. What Senate Bill 176 would do is just take any additional revenues received from the state for remote sellers and deposits it into the tax fund, the tax relief fund, which is a fund that we had previously set up for voluntary remote sales. What this does is it just holds the money until we know what revenues are being collected in that from those efforts at the federal level. A lot of states are doing a lot of different variety of different things. Obviously, the state of New York, California, and Illinois are going to put all of the additional revenue, and they're planning for their budgets and increasing their budgets or paying off some debts that they have. Other states like Utah, Missouri, and hopefully South Dakota, North Dakota, we would like to put the money into a fund, figure out how much revenue we're talking about, and then come up with a plan. The reason I brought this bill, and with the amendment, it takes out anything else, any other issues not related to the Main Street Fairness. I want to focus on Main Street Fairness. I want us, if I have the opportunity to testify in front of U.S. Congress, I want us to have the opportunity to say that South Dakota is not one of those states like Illinois and California that will just pocket the money and run and grow government. I want us to have a meaningful conversation, and I want to be able to be truthful in front of Congress when I testify that we are not going to take the money and run, that we do have a bill in to make sure that we capture the revenue and then come up with a plan of whether what kind of programming we will change in the state of South Dakota. So that's what Senate Bill 176, if you choose to amend and pass, would do. And with that, I'd appreciate your support of Senate Bill 176 as amended. And there is a title amendment on that as well, Mr. Chair. And I will stand by for any further questions.
Thank you. Further proponents? Senate Bill 176 and the amendment. Further proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Any opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Senator Peterson. At this point, correct me if I'm wrong, we're just looking at the large businesses that would voluntarily remit their sales and use tax to the states, that there wouldn't be any teeth in what we're doing?
Mr. Chairman, no. I believe Senate Bill 176, if you pass the amendment, addresses if federal government acts. The current state law talks about voluntary retail licenses and having those sales deposited into the tax relief fund. That is current law today. So your voluntary sellers that are already licensed within Streamline Sales Tax already are deposited within the tax relief fund. What Senate Bill 176 would do if amended with 176FB would take any of the remote sales as authorized by either the Streamline Sales Tax Agreement with the voluntary collectors today would then be mandated on top of all of the other, depending on what the federal law does. Obviously, they're talking a variety of different things for small sellers, so most of it won't happen in South Dakota, but any of those remote sales would then be deposited into the tax relief fund as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My other question, you touched on it, is what's the minimum? I think there were a couple of different thresholds that were in the Main Street Fairness Act and both of those that were there. And so a mom and pop business under $1 million would not have to remit. So do you remember what those thresholds are?
Mr. Chairman, there are a variety of different versions that are out going running around D.C. right now. The discussion going on in the Senate when the bill passed, I believe, was $1 million. If you talk to eBay and Google, they would prefer to see $5 million. If you talk to the Small Business Association at the federal level, they say $5 million is the right number. If you talk to Chairman Goodlatte in the Judiciary Committee, he says zero. So obviously you're going to have any span depending on the conference committee at the federal level will depend on where that number is going to lie. And that's going to be up to the lobbyists and the congressional members to make that decision in conference.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then once this is decided, then would the full 6% come back to South Dakota, and then they would come to our Department of Revenue, and then they would send the 2 cents back to the municipalities that qualify?
Mr. Chair, it is my understanding that the tax relief fund only collects the 4% of the state revenue.
Further questions? Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll move to comments, discussion, action. Oh, yeah, we have a pending amendment, 176FB. Any further comments on the motion to amend?
No.
Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion to amend will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. 176 is so amended. Further comments, discussion, and action on 176 as amended.
176 as amended. Do pass.
Do pass. Second. Motion by Senator Maher, seconded by Rave. Comments on the motion? Any comments? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass as amended, Senate Bill 176. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Brown.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 176 goes to the floor. Do pass as amended. Have a title amendment. 176 FTB, moved by Rave, seconded by Brown. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the title amendment will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Title is so amended. Okay, moving on. We have now on our calendar Senate House Bill 1101, an act revised certain provisions regarding the Board of Directors of the Science and Technology Authority. House Bill 1101 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Tony Venhuizen with the Governor's Office. You've been moving quickly today, and I hope we're not going to slow you down with this final bill. This bill comes from the Governor's Office and is the result of discussions that have taken place over the last year or so with the members of the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority. As you know, the authority was created by the legislature and Governor Rounds to own and administer the former Homestake gold mine, which is being converted into an underground laboratory, as of course you're all aware. There is a board appointed by the governor that operates the authority and operates that facility. A couple of years ago, a vacancy came open on that board, and the idea came forth that it would be a good idea to appoint the president of the South Dakota School of Mines to the authority board. School of Mines, of course, has academic programs that are very closely aligned with this facility, everything from mining and geology to engineering and physics. It's a very good fit. That appointment was made about a year ago, and maybe a little longer. And then you may remember that in October of 2012, the president of School of Mines died suddenly and, of course, created a vacancy on that board. That vacancy was filled while there was an interim president with someone else. And as we were moving ahead, the discussion moved to, well, maybe it would make sense to say that the president of the School of Mines, whoever that might be, is an ex officio member of this board, so that that institution is always very closely tied with the work that the state is doing at the Sanford Underground Lab. So that's what this bill would do. It would add the president of the School of Mines as a non-voting ex officio member. Of course, since that time, we have a new president at the School of Mines, Heather Wilson, who is a Rhodes Scholar and a former congresswoman and has a lot of experience working at the federal level with federal research programs, and so I think would bring a lot to the table in terms of her knowledge as we continue to move forward with this project. So I'm available for questions, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jack Warner, Executive Director for the Board of Regents, and I rise in strong support of House Bill 1101. I believe that the Board of Directors for the Science and Technology Authority will benefit in two important ways by adding the president of the School of Mines and Technology. One is, as Mr. Van Huysen has already pointed out, the School of Mines and its research and its instruction are closely aligned with the work that are, that is being done at the School of Mines. I want to particularly reference your support last year for the physics PhD program, which the School of Mines awards in collaboration with the University of South Dakota. That program is designed very specifically to support the kinds of research that that are being done at the mine itself. The second way that the Board of Directors will benefit is from the presence of Heather Wilson herself. Since the time she took over leadership of the School of Mines and Technology on July 1st of last year, she has proven herself to be an absolutely outstanding leader. And as Mr. Van Huysen has pointed out, she has many connections around the country, not the least of which is strong connections to other national laboratories that are performing research that can complement and supplement the work that's being done at the mine. So for these reasons, we stand in strong support of this House bill and would urge your approval.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Headley. I'm the Executive Director with the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority, and I'd like to offer my strong support for this bill to add the President of School Mines to our board. Strong communications and effective working relationships between the authority and the regional institutions are essential for our mission to serve the needs of science researchers here in the state and around the country. The School of Mines is located geographically close to the lab and has been noted has doctoral programs in physics and geology and has a strong emphasis in engineering and many other disciplines that are essential for us to be able to develop and support an underground science facility. The School of Mines faculty are already members of some of the key science collaborations that are working up at the lab and are deeply involved in the future plans for future experiments for the lab as well. In addition, the School of Mines president will, addition to the board, will help increase communications with other regional institutions in the state and ensure that the lab's activities are well aligned with the state's research efforts. In closing, this bill has been shared with our current board of directors, and they fully support it. And thank you very much. I stand by for any questions you might have.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, we will move to opponents. Any opponents to House Bill 1101? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Any questions? Seeing none, comments, discussion, action. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I move to pass.
Second. Motion to pass by Brown, second by Rave. Comments on the motion, Senator Brown?
I think the proponents did a good job of explaining why this is a good move, and I think any of us that have had a chance to visit the facilities out there can see that there's certainly a beneficial relationship to having the president serve on this board. So I would strongly support the legislation.
Thank you. Further comments? Senator Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as you know, in this legislature, we spend a lot of time listening to stories about jackrabbits and coyotes. It's not very often that the two hard rockers in the legislature get a chance to speak up for the School of Mines. So one of them is going to do that this morning. This is a very good match. Seriously, the School of Mines and the lab have a very good relationship, and it's very good for both of them to work closely together, and it's an excellent idea to have the president serve as an ex officio member. So as a hard rocker, I endorse this bill. Thank you.
Further comments? Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass House Bill 1101. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Brown.
Aye.
Furries.
Aye.
Pauline.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 1101 goes to the floor. Do pass. Senator Brown.
And move consent.
Second.
Motion consent by Brown, second by Rave. Comments on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We got one on consent. That brings us to the end of today's calendar. Any announcements for the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your work. Motion to adjourn by Brown, seconded by Rave. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.